Ken, you and I both have spoken at great length about how many mysteries of the unknown and unexplained captivated us when we were kids, and some of those mysteries remain unexplained. We were talking about the Bermuda Triangle just the other day. Whatever happened with that? Did we just decide to stop investigating it after all of those planes and ships disappeared? Well, you probably enjoy, as I do, Expedition Unknown, a television show that's now starting its 13th season on Discovery. And lucky for us, there's a podcast called Expedition Unknown, where the host, Josh Gates, investigates unsolved, iconic stories across the globe. This is right out of our playbook. With direct audio from the hit TV show, we'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, which we've talked about on our show, to the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama, which, as far as I know, we have never talked about on our show. But these authentic, roughshod journeys help Gates separate fact from fiction and learn the truth behind compelling stories. And wait for it, he investigates the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. His investigation led him to the ocean floor, to the skies above, and even the edge of space to tackle some of the most intriguing disappearances in history. And this is what I've been saying to you, Ken. It isn't just the ocean floor. It goes to the very edge of space. And in the conclusion of his epic investigation, Josh used cutting-edge technology to investigate the Triangle's most infamous shipwrecks and lost flights. Will he find answers to just how the Triangle works, or will it forever remain a mystery? Tune in to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts. Ken, you and I both have spoken at great length about how many mysteries of the unknown and unexplained captivated us when we were kids, and some of those mysteries remain unexplained. We were talking about the Bermuda Triangle just the other day. Whatever happened with that? Did we just decide to stop investigating it after all of those planes and ships disappeared? Well, you probably enjoy, as I do, Expedition Unknown, a television show that's now starting its 13th season on Discovery. And lucky for us, there's a podcast called Expedition Unknown, where the host, Josh Gates, investigates unsolved, iconic stories across the globe. This is right out of our playbook. With direct audio from the hit TV show, we'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, which we've talked about on our show, to the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama, which, as far as I know, we have never talked about on our show. But these authentic, roughshod journeys help Gates separate fact from fiction and learn the truth behind compelling stories. And wait for it, he investigates the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. His investigation led him to the ocean floor, to the skies above, and even the edge of space to tackle some of the most intriguing disappearances in history. And this is what I've been saying to you, Ken. It isn't just the ocean floor. It goes to the very edge of space. And in the conclusion of his epic investigation, Josh used cutting-edge technology to investigate the Triangle's most infamous shipwrecks and lost flights. Will he find answers to just how the Triangle works, or will it forever remain a mystery? Tune in to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
For the first time,
this is Jim, and
receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 707.DA0414, certificate number 25458. The Leaf Blower.
The falling leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves are red and gold.
Now, discerning futurelings will hear in the background, presuming that futurelings are have like
auditory
organs. They're not just reading transcripts of the Omnibus, although it's entirely possible, and I support them. I like podcasts that have been transcribed more than listening to them even. So if you're an Omnibus futureling and you like to transcribe podcasts...
You're in a slave society where you're... Your large-eared slaves have found these records and
right.
have created a text version of them for you. Good job.
Genius.
Way to be on top of the ear pyramid.
But those of you who are auditory creatures will hear in the background of this episode a reappearance of the leaf blower that appeared in last week's episode, or I'm sorry, the Christmas Eve episode.
We had an amazing reaction
yeah.
to that. People were just like, let's have more of... The leaf blower noise.
Can we get more leaf blower noise?
And John and I thought, you know, it's the least we can do for our devoted fans.
And what says Merry Christmas more than power tools that are noisy and controversial?
That's a gift for Dad. I feel like it just stopped, though. What if the leaf blower noise stops right as we...
Oh, well, I think it's perfect because a leaf blower on the show, throughout the show, would be pretty annoying. But a leaf blower just to herald the entrance of the show? It's pretty nice.
That's what the leaf blower is for, to herald things.
But wait, the leaf blower routinely goes off and then starts again.
So that's the beauty of the leaf blower.
If it
just made a continuous noise, you would eventually not hear the leaf blower.
But a leaf blower has some kind of trigger that allows the operator to go...
And sometimes it wants a little rest, so you'll get and then you'll be like, this is great.
Oh,
finally, I can't believe he's finally done.
Yeah. It is strange that power tools have that operator option. It's kind of like the Mercury space program where the astronauts said, hey, we don't want to just be in a tin can. Like, give us a control, give us some switches.
Do you think the original leaf blower was just a thing that was always on?
Always on.
And they handed it to the guy, and he was like, this is, well, you know, I'd like to have a little more autonomy.
I mean,
here.
All power tools should just be on or off. If a lawnmower just made one sound, it's the...
What about my agency as a gardener, John?
I don't know.
Here's how I express my art, through landscape architecture. This is what the future should know about
All
me.
Things will eventually be Roomba-sized, where they just become, you know... little robot discs that travel the world.
I just saw a movie about, there it is, it's bad.
There it goes, it's on the other side of the house now.
Just saw this, while I was trying to think of the name of Silvio Berlusconi, I just saw this movie about Silvio Berlusconi, and the movie starts with his immaculate lawn out in back of his, I don't know where he lives, Sardinia, maybe?
Yeah, sure, so let's say.
His amazing Sardinian beachfront media mogul estate, and the lawn is just... patrolled by a series of Roomba-sized automatic mowers.
Really?
Going about their business, keeping his lawn perfectly manicured 24/7.
I just want a device that keeps the moles from piling giant mole hills everywhere.
Don't offend our subterranean listeners.
Oh, right. Sorry, moles.
But yeah, they're the worst. Like
Sorry, moles, but we're going to slam you now.
You live under the ground, that's fine. Do whatever you want under there.
Right.
But do you have to make a little pyramid of dirt just because? Why?
Yeah, carry the dirt to a single location and build a giant pyramid. That's how civilization starts, moles. Not by building tiny little pyramids everywhere you go.
As long as we got thousands of little ones, you're a nuisance.
Yeah.
But as soon as you can build one big one, you're a force to be reckoned with.
That's right.
You're a demographic.
Yep. Now, and then start sacrificing virgin moles on the top.
Oh, I was going to say form a political action committee.
Oh.
But well, whatever.
One or the other.
Either way.
Ken, do you have, as a dad, as an American dad with a big house, do you have a power tool collection / fascination?
I feel like my noisy things.
What are your noisy
bench
things
in my garage are kind of limited. When you're an American dad, you have two noisy kids,
right? But I mean, do you?
I have a weed whacker,
okay,
which is very noisy,
super noisy, dangerous.
It's got a little fibrous thing that flips around, decapitating weeds or whatever else you put under there.
Moles. Do you enjoy using it, or do you hire that work out?
I used to enjoy it,
yeah,
and increasingly with age and with the novelty of it wearing off, I have stopped enjoying it. Like when we first got people to like do the stuff I didn't want to do, take care of our sprinklers and whatnot. I hated repairing sprinkler heads every spring.
Sure.
I would tell the guy, you know, give me a quote, but then give me a quote without mowing because I want to mow my own lawn.
Yeah.
And then the quotes were like the same because
it's just like the New York Times Sunday edition costs $11 and then all week long it's an extra 50 cents.
Apparently, just they have the lawnmower there anyway. Somehow it costs you more if they don't use it.
Right.
And at that point, I even stopped mowing my lawn. Plus, it seemed like most of my lawn mowing was lawnmower maintenance.
But this seems like something you would have farmed out to your kids who are looking for chores, looking for reasons to justify their food consumption.
This was like before my kids were old enough to actually do it.
Right.
And now that my son is old enough, I feel like now we've got a system in place where a vast invisible underclass does all this work for us.
Right.
And I'm the worst.
That's teaching
basically.
Him the wrong lessons.
I'm a huge part of the problem. He will be a poor Gen Zer,
right,
with no visible means of support and no access to my amazing wealth
and no history of doing menial labor as a child,
no experience with it.
I mean, let me come to Caitlin's defense here. There's no reason that she shouldn't be put to manual labor just as much as Dylan.
Well, she's starting to get old enough. She could be mowing lawns. When we go to my in-law's place and he's got a big manicured golf course looking lawn.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it on the grass show.
Yep.
And a riding mower. Dylan will happily hop on the riding mower
and
do whatever you want.
That's a ride, though.
But yeah, that's a free ride. But at home, like the best we can do is, we have a cleaning service that comes every few weeks. Hey, like your room is a disaster. You need to pre-clean for the actual cleaners.
Right, which always seems like a droll irony.
We've prepared him for a world in which this invisible slave class exists, but you still have to slightly inconvenience yourself to avail yourself of it.
Right. To clear a path for them.
Yay.
When I was, I think, what was it? I mean, I was 7 years old, I think, when my mom first showed me how to use a push mower.
Really?
And we had a...
You said you had one of the powered kind.
Well, when I was young, we had an unpowered mower.
Right.
And I was given that job, and there are several pictures of me, Polaroid pictures or washed out Kodachrome photos of me leaning my entire body weight into this push mower where the handles was above my head because we had a giant lawn. I mean, we had a third of an acre.
That's the smallest lot in Alaska you can get.
I was given this job, mow the lawn, and I spent an entire Saturday out there pushing this, like, you know, those hand mowers are not, that's not an easy method.
My memory of this is that you enjoyed it.
Loved it. Well, because it was a man-sized job. And then I got old enough that my mom allowed me to use the electric motor and the mower. And 90% of that was just keeping yourself from mowing the electrical cord. Like, you know, you had to do this constant moving of the extension cord.
The first time my wife tried to use the weed eater, she cut the cord.
She cut the cord, yeah.
She did.
But the electric mower was an old-fashioned one, and so a lot quieter than a two-stroke gas mower, but still a pretty loud thing, and I felt I was very empowered by having a power tool. But when I graduated to the gas lawnmower, I still, every time I start up a gas mower, I feel like a grown-up.
I just have bad associations with the mowers that won't start. I feel like, what a hassle this is.
Yeah.
Why do I have to re-remember, keep pulling on the thing. Okay, what's going on here? Is it the starter? Do I not have the starter in?
Most gas mowers have two-cycle engines, and two-cycle engines are ones where the lubrication, the oil that is necessary to lubricate the mechanical parts, is actually added into the gasoline.
I've never had the kind you have to mix, but what a hassle.
Yeah, it is a hassle. Well, you don't mix it yourself, but you do pour the oil into a separate receptacle, and then it mixes into the gas.
Oh, that I have done. Isn't there some kind where you actually have to like mix two parts of fuel? With
the old-fashioned two-cycle motors like that you see on dirt bikes and older mechanical stuff, you had to take a bucket and pour some mixture of gas and oil into it.
You have to be an alchemist, basically, to get your lawnmower started.
Then small engine manufacturers realized that if you just gave the consumer an extra place to put the oil and you had a little machine that mixed it in there or a little drip, that would make consumers a lot more comfortable. To have a four-cycle engine, one that actually has a separate lubrication system, much more expensive. And most gas mowers don't have that, but those mowers feel like, I mean, it's the, in a lot of ways, it's our, as young suburbanites, your first exposure to being in charge of a powered machine.
It absolutely is, and
one that's dangerous.
Just the feeling of ownership that comes, because you can imagine the adult mowing his lawn,
yeah,
and you realize that, you know, you push down the thing and that thing starts by itself. And you're like, whoa, I'm walking. I'm now that guy. I can turn and wave jauntily to a neighbor as I take a pass across my front yard.
And you see the results of the work you're doing. I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than there's plenty more satisfying. I mean,
the greatest pleasure in life is a well-mowed lawn. That's what I have always said.
Ken, you and I both have spoken at great length about how many mysteries of the unknown and unexplained captivated us when we were kids, and some of those mysteries remain unexplained. We were talking about the Bermuda Triangle just the other day. Whatever happened with that? Did we just decide to stop investigating it after all of those planes and ships disappeared? Well, you probably enjoy, as I do, Expedition Unknown, a television show that's now starting its 13th season on Discovery. And lucky for us, there's a podcast called Expedition Unknown, where the host, Josh Gates, investigates unsolved, iconic stories across the globe. This is right out of our playbook. With direct audio from the hit TV show, we'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, which we've talked about on our show, to the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama, which, as far as I know, we have never talked about on our show. But these authentic roughshod journeys help Gates separate fact from fiction and learn the truth behind compelling stories. And, wait for it, he investigates the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. His investigation led him to the ocean floor, to the skies above, and even the edge of space, to tackle some of the most intriguing disappearances in history. And this is what I've been saying to you, Ken. It isn't just the ocean floor. It goes to the very edge of space. And in the conclusion of his epic investigation, Josh used cutting-edge technology to investigate the Triangle's most infamous shipwrecks and lost flights. Will he find answers to just how the Triangle works, or will it forever remain a mystery? Tune in to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
Looking back at, you know, at your well-mowed lawn and looking ahead at the scraggly weeds, I mean, that's a big thrill.
I definitely had that every time. Like, to me, the weed whacker was the epitome of that. Like, you have just tamed the wilderness. It's the only time I've ever felt like a pioneer.
And you used to have a much larger lawn than you do now.
It's true. Right? Yeah. In the city, we have a small lawn. And that's fine. It's better for the earth to have a small lawn.
It's better for the earth. Grass is bad, as we've described. I just bought a new house that has a very large bramble, and in going down there and hacking away at the unwanted invasive species and trying to improve this property, I've realized that that this kind of gardening is deeply satisfying at the most basic human level, to go into a overgrown ravine and turn it into a sort of, you know, to build the most rudimentary trail. It's a meditative work that
you're immediately in a flow state.
You really are.
It turns out that our most primal hatred is for thicket.
Yeah, right.
Like, if we could just turn all of our human animus that we turn on each other, if we could just turn away to where it actually belongs,
if there was a continent that was just overrun with sticker bushes and we could each send a representative army there to combat them, it's basically the plot of Starship Troopers, except those are bugs.
They have some, it turns out they're fully conscious.
Well, you remember when Walker Bush started two unwinnable wars.
He was just clearing, undergrowth.
Yeah, went back to Texas.
Sagebrush or whatever
clear
that stuff
brush,
is.
Right. And he seemed so happy.
Yeah, scrub oak. See, this problem I can solve. We need a continent of scrub oak. Maybe when global warming makes Antarctica, you know, turns it into Nevada or whatever, that's right. What we should use it for.
Just put blackberry bushes down there.
Send UN forces in blue helmets and just get out there aggression. It's like when my dogs need to go run around outside.
Well, part of the, as we discussed on the grass episode, I mean, a real symbol of suburban success is to have carved your plot of land away out of the bramble and now be responsible for maintaining it in high style. And as you get richer and richer, you have more and more land, more and more impeccable grass. Most people are not rich enough to have lawn Roombas, but you do have a keep up with the Joneses kind of necessity that you...
Right, because you're going to see their nice lawn next to yours. If yours is the dandelion lawn, everyone's going to know.
Oh.
It's back, baby.
Listen to that weed whacker. It's delightful.
I mean, let the record show that I said, what topic are we going to do omnibus on? And you said, what do you think about the leaf blower? Now, I thought you meant... what you actually meant was, do you think we can record while my neighbor is using his leaf blower?
Right.
And I thought you meant, should we do a show on the leaf blower?
Right. And it turned out I have an awful lot of leaf blower knowledge.
So this show replaced, the Franco-Prussian War.
Right.
Or whatever we could have been doing right now.
This is a spontaneous omnibus on the leaf blower that is currently right outside our window. Right outside the window of the bunker.
So really, the third person who has the third most influence on the show after you and me is your leaf-blowing neighbor, Doug.
My neighbor, Doug, yeah. My neighbor, Doug, likes power tools. He keeps his house impeccably manicured, and I recognize the sound of his leaf blower as being Doug's leaf blower, and we're in the depths of Seattle winter, which usually has no snow. But it does have a lot of
leaves clogging, soggy leaves clogging gutters.
So pine needles.
You got to blow them. You got to blow all that stuff before it gets soggy and starts blocking the gutter, or literally your street will flood.
Well, so this is the argument for leaf blowers. Now, leaf blowers are a fairly new technology. The original sort of concept of a backpack blower or a handheld blower was for spreading insecticide. It was a fogger machine, like to spread DDT to kill mosquitoes and other pests.
Really?
Yeah.
It postdates. So the Romans were not walking around with big bellows?
Oh, they may have been.
What say you, dermatitis? how clear ye the leaves?
But the first, the first kind of backpack, motor powered thing that wasn't a vacuum or a whacker.
Yeah.
Was a blower that blew insecticide, developed by a Japanese company called Kyoritsu Noki.
This is after the war?
This is after the war. It's sort of the pre-Korean War, so late 40s. And it was used, this technology was used as a fogger all the way through the Silent Spring era.
Weren't the Japanese worried about Godzillas and Mothras?
Like, they absolutely were.
But they didn't know that insecticide could be just as bad.
Well, and they were importing or exporting it to the United States. It wasn't until the 70s that the idea of the idea that a blower, just a simple blower that didn't blow anything else but air, the idea that this would be a useful appliance, not just for garden work, but for, all manner of kind of municipal maintenance.
Prior to this, everyone raked.
Raked and broomed.
And it was kind of a comic signifier how awful raking leaves was. It was a punchline about dad spending all afternoon making a big pile of leaves, and then
the kids would run and jump in the leaves.
Or a gust of wind would blow it all away. But it was one of the funny, the hilarious travails of suburbia.
That's right. This was before most people had the option of contracting with a landscaping company that would come around and do this work. It was a symbol of kind of the onerous underbelly of home ownership.
But people kind of enjoy
that. Oh, sure, because it's a wonderful sort of symbolic fall behavior. It's just like carving pumpkins to get out and rake up all your fall leaves.
Because it is a chore that you're not going to be doing year-round. Right. So there is that. You're like, for a couple of years, I spent a lot of time raking. I've never owned a leaf blower, but I've lived under my trees and my neighbor's trees enough that I had to do so much raking.
Yeah.
And you get calluses, but there's something about about being out in the crisp fall air, and that tree's going to dump all its leaves over the next 3 weeks and then it'll be done.
Well, my daughter, who's 8 and a half, as her best friend is Doug's daughter, who lives across the street. And she and Doug's daughter, this autumn, they watched Ghostbusters.
Speaking of backpack-based technologies.
And they were excited about Ghostbusters, and they were talking the day after about Ghostbusters and how exciting it was.
Did busting make them feel good?
Busting made them feel really good, so good that they wanted to continue busting, and they were talking about what they could bust, and they realized they could bust leaves. And so they started a company, the two of them, in our living room, called Leaf Busters. They came up with a theme song, which of course is the first thing you do.
Is it just Ghostbusters theme by Ray Parker Jr. with a new one word substitution?
But then they also combined it with another like Huckleberry Hound theme song that they also changed the lyrics to, and they made a mashup, nice. Which is their theme music. And then they took rakes out of the garage and started going door to door, completely unprompted by the adults, ringing doorbells saying, "We're here to bust your leaves."
Did they have a rate, or was this fun for them?
They had a rate. It was $5 each.
Per leaf.
No, $5 for however long it took.
Whoa.
And
we got a $15 minimum wage in this city, John.
Well, yeah, but these girls were establishing their own new economy. I mean, we also have anti-child labor laws, but nobody was putting these kids to work. And, and of course, I was then pressed into service as the only adult that believed enough in the Leaf Busters to follow them dutifully around the neighborhood, kind of hiding behind neighbors' cars while these girls went up to the front door in their new independence and struck these deals with people. The two of them have so far made $28 each busting neighbors' leaves.
You didn't tell them to raise prices? They really
I
could.
Have been suggesting that they raise prices, but they're contemptuous of me and my capitalistic.
Dad, busting makes us feel good.
Yeah, and they're like, late capitalism.
Makes us feel bad. Okay, boomer.
The problem additionally in the Northwest is that a lot of the debris in lawns is pine needle based.
Yes.
And so
it goes right through a rake.
And a lot of the neighbors have said, we don't want you to rake our pine needles. We have somebody do that with a leaf blower. And so my daughter, who a week ago had no opinion about leaf blowers at all, has become incredibly anti-leaf blower. She feels like they are, first of all, stealing her jobs. But second of all...
These leaf blowers come up here?
Yep. She's realized that they're noisy, they're dirty, and it's unnecessary because all you need is a broom. You don't need this power tool. So I've been really soaking in leaf blower animus for the last week.
It looks like this is all kind of a smokescreen that's, you know, driven by the fact that she's been put out of work by a leaf blower. She's like the Detroit auto line worker,
right,
watching the robot do her job.
But
and now she's pretending she cares about the environment.
She wants
her $5.
The great irony is that Doug, who is currently leaf blowing right outside our window,
in the middle of our show,
it's his daughter who is who's one of the main leaf busters.
Isn't that what we think about boomers?
Yeah.
They don't mind. They got theirs.
Thanks, boomer. Anyway, the in the 70s, all of a sudden leaf blowers came on the scene. And leaf blowers are they have year-round advantages because although raking leaves is very seasonal, sweeping the front of storefronts, keeping the gutters clean.
Now it's a 90-second job.
Right. Public parks, maintain, you know, if you had a rock garden and it had debris
That's
in it.
A pretty big if.
It's, well, I don't know. As we move away from grass toward white rock gardens.
That's right. Maybe climate change will give me a rock garden someday, or maybe I'll just become a tech billionaire CEO.
It's really hard to clean a rock garden of debris unless you have a leaf blower.
Talk to me about snow blowers. Is that a different invention?
It is. A snow blower is...
I have a neighbor who has one.
A snow blower is there's basically a large mechanical screw, kind of the type of thing that you would use to auger a hole for a well. It's sideways, and it collects the snow and directs it to a spout.
Shoots it backwards.
And shoots it either over to the side or backwards or somewhere out of your... I mean, the classic snowblower move is to blow the snow in the right where you need to be blowing next.
I guess I hope it doesn't shoot it directly backwards because you would just be walking along.
Right. Putting it right back behind you. And you can... The snowblowers have a spout that you can move so that when you turn and come back the other way, you can flip it over and put all your snow in one place. But that's a kind of auger-based thing.
And it doesn't work that well with Seattle wet snow either.
No. The greatest snowblowers are ones that they put on the front of locomotives to clear the snow off of train tracks.
Oh.
And they are they're propeller blades that are the size of the front of a train.
And are they just making a big wind tunnel, basically?
The
propeller is physically hitting the
snow, chopping it up and sending it off to the side. Because in certain parts of the world, snow falls heavily enough that it blocks trains. I mean, you need these devices. They're famous in Alaska. The White Pass Yukon Railroad uses one to great effect.
I'm trying to imagine a train with a big propeller.
It's not like moving super fast. It's not like Snowpiercer. it's moving slow enough that that this propeller can work. But leaf blowers became very popular, especially in California, where popular
where
landscaping
lazy.
Companies, where people are lazy or they're paying other people to do their work.
That's because they're lazy.
And the recognition that on the part of everyone that you could do a job four times as fast with a leaf blower as you could with a broom or a rake. Sort of revolutionized the cleaning up of public spaces.
Okay, broomer.
Oh, but these were two cycle motors in most cases, or they were connected with extension cords, which are not super handy, and extremely loud and polluting. There have been studies done that show that using a leaf blower for a half an hour, a two-cycle leaf blower, for 1/2 hour of leaf blowing puts the same amount of particulate emissions and CO2 gases into the atmosphere as would driving a Ford F-150 from Texas to Alaska.
That's what I saw the American Lung Association recommends against leaf blowers for that reason. Worse than cars.
Well, for that reason, and also because leaf blowers blow all the allergens and toxic chemicals that have filtered down onto the ground, all the heavy metals and mercuries and arsenics, basically vaporizes them into
A cloud that surrounds you, the blower.
Yeah, you, the blower, and anyone who's walking around, some of those smaller particulates remain in the air for hours afterwards.
Is it just because they don't have, automakers put in new technologies into their engines to make them run more efficiently, and the small size of leaf blower motors means they don't have any of those benefits?
Leaf blowers and gasoline motors are using lawnmower motors are using the very basic little engines.
Catalytic converter on one, but...
But that would require it be a four-cycle motor. So you'd need, they become increasingly complicated. And the problem with the two-cycle motor is that they're extremely inefficient in terms of how much of the fuel they actually combust. About 30% of the oil gas mixture that goes into a two-cycle motor just comes right out the other side as vaporized petroleum products without even burning.
It doesn't even get burned.
So they're not, it's not even smoke exhaust. It's just pure bleh.
Got my gas guzzler here.
So as leaf blowers became more and more popular in California as a way of manicuring all these these palatial lawns, not just estates, but they became very popular in suburbia. One of the arguments for leaf blowers was that much of that work had prior been done with hoses. People would stand out there in their front yard with a hose. Water. And wash the dirt out of their driveway. Well, now you can do it with the leaf blower. And in California, as the omnibus has showed more than once, there's a water shortage.
I've never done that, but I have used a lawnmower to rake my leaves.
To just chop them up?
Yeah, just choose them up.
Yeah.
And
mulches
them into the bag if you want to compost.
I have spent a lot of time with a garden hose out kind of washing down driveways, because I live in the Northwest where water is in abundance.
Our utopia has nothing but water.
We just
choke on that, California.
We just leave our hoses on all winter.
We use water to solve all our problems.
But this was a selling point for leaf blowers, the labor saving and also water saving. But predictably, California is also the home to a lot of very special people who are very, very precious.
Who are we talking about here? Movie stars?
We're talking about upper middle class homeowners in Carmel by the Sea. And so the recognition that these were disruptive, polluting, and also extremely annoying machines caused the residents of the aforementioned Carmel by the Sea to ban leaf blowers even before they were invented.
What? Wait.
Somehow... They were using leaf blowers in Carmel by the Sea.
Should mankind ever attain a level of technology such that leaves may be moved magically through the air?
We hereby ban them in advance.
So you're saying that they passed this law back in the 50s or 60s or whatever?
1975, Carmel by the Sea had banned this kind of backpack blower.
And there was no commercial such thing available?
It was on the horizons. The Kiritsu Noki Company had introduced the leaf blower as a leaf blower rather than just sort of an all-purpose blower in 1977. But they were marketing blowers for other, backpack blowers for other purposes. Shortly thereafter, maybe a year later, the company changed their name to Echo, the Echo Company, which still sells leaf blowers, is one of the main producers of leaf blowers. But Carmel by the Sea was ahead of their time. Beverly Hills banned leaf blowers in 1978. And that began a...
You can kind of see that it's all communities where the homeowners themselves are not convenienced that much by the existence of leaf blowers.
Right.
They don't mind if their low-paid staffs...
sit and broom.
Yeah, take a few hours longer in a quieter fashion.
Right. And the argument, you know, the landscaper argument is that it costs a lot more to do it with a broom, but residents of Carmel by the Sea
right.
aren't really that concerned about it. Compared to like sitting at home looking at your Fabergé egg collection and hearing that annoying sound that thankfully now Doug has stopped leaf blowing again.
So should we change the topic of the show?
No, I don't think so.
The Franco-Prussian War.
But wealthy neighborhoods across the country, sort of like dominoes, one by one, banned leaf blowers. Rye, New York, and, you know.
It's the kind of law you could pass in the richest 0.1% and in the poorest chunk of America where nobody's using power tools on their lawn anyway.
Right.
You know, apartment dwellers or whatever. But there's a vast middle of suburbanites who hate the noise, don't like pollution much, but also hate raking more.
Right. And as it became more and more of an environmental issue, it became more easily banned, or leaf blowers became more easily banned in larger municipalities, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles as a whole.
Oh, really? L.A. bans leaf blowers.
Well, yes. And
Seattle has not.
Controversially, right? Because it is, although it is a pollution problem, increasingly more and more were electric, and then eventually battery-powered, as battery power technology got to the point that it could make a handheld leaf blower that had a reasonable range.
What's the noise difference like?
It's a lot less noise with a battery-powered blower, although there's still a whirring motor. Sure. You don't have this grinding gas engine.
It's a more beautiful noise.
Although this leaf blower that we've been listening to is a battery powered one. It's an electric one.
Oh, it's still not great, huh?
It's still not great.
Do you think the Carmel law was like, if such a time comes that leaf blowers can be made to have harmonious, melodious sounds?
Maybe if one just played the Nutcracker Suite.
Can you think of any technologies you would ban right now, should they ever exist? Like, would you like to write a law like that?
Oh gosh, I can think of so many laws I want to write for things that don't exist yet.
Why didn't we do it for like facial recognition? Like we had the chance.
Too late.
Oh yeah, the cat's out of the bag.
The thing that battery powered leaf blowers don't do is they don't stop creating air pollution in the form of
they're still kicking up the same stuff.
Kicking up, and there's even more mercury and arsenic on the ground now than there ever was.
Is that true?
Oh yeah, because of all the mercury arsenic companies that just make it to aerosol it.
I've just seen all the movies. They're just all dumping it near schools. And then the enterprising lawyer, the crusading lawyer, has to call him out on it. And maybe it's Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
There, a gas-powered leaf blower creates like over 100 decibels of noise. It's something that becomes a workplace hazard. It's why you see all those leaf blower people with earmuffs on.
Earmuffs on. Yeah. The same thing I now wear to Vampire Weekend shows. Because I'm extremely old.
Oh, it's too bad. You have to buy them in the children's section, don't you? Are they all pink and covered with unicorns?
I actually do wear earplugs at concerts, and maybe I should have started sooner.
I should have done it. I actually have custom earplugs, but I...
Like molded to the size of yours? They dripped candle wax in there or something?
But I always forget. I always forget to bring them.
I just don't like how the music sounds when you put them in. You're and then you put them in, and it's like...
Oh, well, the expensive ones...
They don't muffle?
The ones that I have you can... They have a perfect... They let a perfect screen of...
that's what I want.
...of frequencies through, so you still hear that thumping bass. Although, meh...
I've been doing a thing where I put one in one ear and then in and out.
Yeah,
Ear goes deaf still, but at a half the speed.
Keep one ear pointed away from the stage and you'll be fine.
You could just use noise canceling headphones for your neighbor's lawnmower.
You look like a door. Sure. Can you smell like one, two?
We recommend that you listen to this show retroactively. You listen to the show with noise canceling earphones so you don't hear Doug.
Now there is still a big market for these. Landscapers will say that one of the major you know, as we move away from, as homeowners are like, well, I mean, we don't care about the extra cost, although I think that is convincing for your regular homeowner, like Doug would care about the extra cost. Doug won't spend an extra $2 Doug wouldn't even give $5 to his own daughter to rake his leaves. He was like, I have a leaf blower. Get out of here.
He's not a client?
Get out of your own lawn.
Jeez, you got to support leaf busters, Doug.
But a lot of landscapers will say that much of the landscaping that happens now is municipal landscaping. All of these public works projects, all of the city streets and so forth. And that additional cost, if people were doing that work manually, that is your taxpayer dollars. And, you know, that resonates with people. But leaf blower technology continues to be a kind of growth area. In fact, just recently, Elon Musk, no less than Elon Musk, announced that, and this is this year, announced that
a massive laser in space that will shoot the leaves on your lawn.
No, Tesla. Tesla is working hard.
Is it just battery tech? Is that the main thing?
Well, no. I mean, it's Elon Musk, right? So he's using every part of the buffalo, and he's trying to create a quiet electric leaf blower. Ken, you and I both have spoken at great length about how many mysteries of the unknown and unexplained captivated us when we were kids, and some of those mysteries remain unexplained. We were talking about the Bermuda Triangle just the other day. Whatever happened with that? Did we just decide to stop investigating it after all of those planes and ships disappeared? Well, you probably enjoy, as I do, Expedition Unknown, a television show that's now starting its 13th season on Discovery. And lucky for us, there's a podcast called Expedition Unknown, where the host, Josh Gates, investigates unsolved, iconic stories across the globe. This is right out of our playbook. With direct audio from the hit TV show, we'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, which we've talked about on our show, to the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama, which, as far as I know, we have never talked about on our show. But these authentic, roughshod journeys help Gates separate fact from fiction and learn the truth behind compelling stories. And wait for it, he investigates the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. His investigation led him to the ocean floor, to the skies above, and even the edge of space to tackle some of the most intriguing disappearances in history. And this is what I've been saying to you, Ken. It isn't just the ocean floor. It goes to the very edge of space. And in the conclusion of his epic investigation, Josh used cutting-edge technology to investigate the Triangle's most infamous shipwrecks and lost flights. Will he find answers to just how the Triangle works, or will it forever remain a mystery? Tune in to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
Here's my idea. Ultrasonics. You
pulverize.
Yeah, shoot vibrations at the stuff.
Zzz. And it just turns into dust. But then what do you do about the dust? Then the world is covered with a layer of leaf dust. You got to blow it. You got to blow that dust.
But where are you blowing it to? It's still going to be leaf dust somewhere.
Well, there are also vacuums that do this work, right? That can vacuum up. And I think if you pulverize the leaves, then you could come along behind them with some kind of noisy electric vacuum.
It's doubling the number of noisy things, one to inhale and one to exhale. But it doesn't seem efficient.
If they were all Roombas, yeah. I don't know. You know, the Elon Musk story has an interesting antecedent, which is that about a month before, a week before Elon Musk announced the quiet electric leaf blower, Rainn Wilson, star of stage and screen.
Local legend, Rainn Wilson.
Seattle's own
Dwight.
Rainn Wilson of the Office television program tweeted at Elon Musk. He said, "Can you make a quiet electric leaf blower?" A week later, Elon Musk announced it. Rainn Wilson said, "Hey,
thanks, Elon.
You know, give me some credit here." And Elon said, "No, we were doing it already." Neener.
What a dick. Couldn't he just be nice and say, "We appreciate your input. We live to serve."
I know. I would like to say high five, Rainn Wilson, for you know, taking it right to Elon.
I bet he did. I bet Elon's just, he's, you know, fabricated all these backdated documents to make it look like they were working on leaf blowing lasers,
right?
Laser robots. But I think I'm going to say it was all Dwight.
Well, yeah, let's give Dwight credit where credit is due.
Unless these are the robots that eventually become sentient and they're all on our front lawns, just vaporizing us.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you've ever watched I know you have, any of those Boston Dynamic videos of their robot dogs that absolutely look like terror kill machines.
Like, this has been invented to kill you. That's the trade name.
If one of those
robot that will kill you by
was
Boston
out
Dynamics.
Like click clacking out in your yard, pulverizing leaves with a laser beam and then vacuuming them up.
There's got to be an organic solution. There's got to be some kind of bacteria or some kind of
that eliminates leaves
that chews them up.
That's not what we want.
Some kind of cool termite that you just unleash in your yard. In the morning, you wake up and
it has no natural predators.
It's all gone. No, it gets so full of the leaves it chews up that it just immediately dies
and becomes mole food. And then there's a mole plague.
I guess you're always going to have these externalities. I don't know.
Well, this has become
what you can do is what we're already doing: cut down all the trees in suburbia. As long as
they all die of Dutch elm disease.
Yeah, as long as the tree cover of American cities continues to decline, this problem solves itself very quickly, right?
But the leaf blower controversy has become kind of an exemplar. It is maybe one of the key exemplars of a sort of suburban NIMBY cluelessness.
Signifier. You wanted to say signifier.
I do. It's a signifier of NIMBY cluelessness.
An SNC.
Because so much of the complaint about leaf blower noise and pollution seems to come from incredibly privileged people who have almost no
real problems.
Real problems and no sense that this is a minor complaint relative to. And this is popular within our culture, right? That if you make a minor complaint, there's always a chorus of people there to remind you that people are dying of starvation and et cetera,
right?
Right? That your complaint does not measure up to the ultimate complaint. And I don't think we've arrived yet at what the ultimate unassailable complaint could be.
We need a problem so bad that you can always use it as that punchline. I believe in this 100%. There's only so many hours in a day. Every minute I'm spending whining about leaf blowers, I should be spending raising money for cancer research.
Right. I mean, there's always someone whose child died of a horrible condition a little bit younger than the last person whose child died, and that person has
is probably a quarterback. And the other quarterback whose child was a little older is mad.
But there is a real dividing line culturally now between people who are defending leaf blowers and people who are opposed to leaf blowers.
What is the woke side of this debate? It's not clear. I mean,
if
you're on the side of the earth, you're also with the angry ultra-rich NIMBYs who can afford manual lawn care.
But if you're on the side of the worker,
yeah,
then you are also on the side of the polluter and the enslaver.
The mercury and the noise.
Right.
Nobody likes mercury and noise.
Nobody does. And so how do you, I mean, what, let me put it to you, Ken, as the woke omnibuser.
As the jury of all wokeness.
Which side do you come down upon?
There's got to be some Solomonic move I can pull.
Right. How do you cut the baby in two?
Cut the leaf blower in half.
Are you pro rake or are you pro blower?
I'm pro rake, but I'm pro a vast government program of getting underprivileged kids out to
rake the world.
To rake the world at competitive market pay.
So you're saying that you have your, if it were up to you,
I want to nationalize the raking industry.
You would pass a $15 an hour law and put underprivileged youths to work raking the lawns of Carmel by the Sea.
Or anywhere else.
Anywhere that needs a good
living wage. That's the basis of my plan, which I call
Leafs Across America. Rakes Across America.
Yeah, what's the JFK era kind of a big great society right, name for this?
Camelot. What would it be? It would be the Leafs Project Administration.
The LPA.
I guess, I have to argue for the technology side and say that, like everything, Silicon Valley is going to disrupt both sides of the leaf clearing debate.
They'll do it in some awful venture capitalist way.
It'll be an app.
It'll be an app that brings some sad person to your house to rake, and then you'll find out later he's getting like 89 cents an hour.
Right. You offer him a tip, and he's like, we're not allowed to take tips.
Wink, wink, wink. Please give me food. My family hasn't eaten in weeks. And that concludes The Leaf Blower. And hopefully it concludes your neighbor's leaf blowing. I haven't heard it in a few minutes.
No, it sounds like Doug has gone home.
Entry 707.DA0414, certificate number 25458, in the omnibus. So now you know how to get your topic on the show. Just stand next to John's house and do something annoying, and he will do a show about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Let the record show, I have a neighbor named Doug as well, but he's very nice and makes scented soap. He'll just bring over lavender soaps that he's made in his basement, presumably not with human tissue.
Presumably.
We assume.
I wish that, my Doug is fairly nice neighbor, but he has a kind of cake thing that every once in a while he brings over a piece of cake, but every gift from Doug has strings attached.
Not our Doug. Our Doug will bring over the nice soap, and he'll always tell us, I didn't use any human fat or tissue in this. And we're like, that's odd that he always insists on that, but we believe him. Listeners, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, you can find our tweets and posts at Omnibus Project on all the good platforms. John is at John Roderick on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Ken Jennings on Twitter, but I don't need the followers. I'm fine. Follow John. There was a Facebook page at which futurelings could complain about all the parallel universe comics we did not mention on the show. That's currently what it's for right now, at least. We received digital communication at our email address. Nobody knows what the E is for. Just a weird thing about email. Could be anything.
Really?
Yep.
Email. Electronic.
I don't think that's right.
Electronic mail?
No, you're right. It's electronic.
Oh, phew.
Our address was theomnibusproject@gmail.com. People could mail us physical artifacts. Send us all your mulched leaves and chick tracts or all the Christmas presents you didn't want to The Omnibus Project, P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. If Santa brought you cash or a rich uncle died,
yes,
and you feel like it's time to support your interests and passions,
yes,
and you are a lawn mowing, podcast listening suburbanite, you can help subsidize the expenses of the omnibus by pledging to donate at patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, when we were maybe in the last age where people could be annoyed by something so small as a motor on a machine that's doing work that really nobody cares about. Like, you're living in the post-apocalyptic wasteland where the sound of a leaf blower would be music to your ears, because
exactly,
it would symbolize a halcyon time when we had so little to worry about.
Also, when there were leaves. before we killed all the trees.
Where our skin wasn't sloughing off, where we didn't have to coat ourselves in sewer mud just to survive a brief run across a sun-baked scape.
It's all just that I just realized this. It's all an implication of suburbia. People living in cities are used to terrible noises and don't complain. People in the country live half a mile from their nearest neighbor.
Right.
Suburbia was where we still jammed people together, but somehow gave them the expectation of...
that they had a bucolic privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there are an awful lot of leaf blowers being used in the cities, but you're right. They just are part of the...
New York. Yeah. Oh, the jackhammer at 7 a.m. again. You gotta love it. Taxi cab horns. Yeah. What a city.
Paruga.
That's why you want to be on the 20th floor or up of the hotel.
Well, we hope and pray that this catastrophe we fear may never come. And in that sense, Ken, maybe we should rejoice that Doug is still out there on his roof blowing pine needles into his gutters.
One of the great constants of modern life.
Yeah. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. And to you, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. If Providence allows, in the form of, in this case, a godchild born in a manger, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry. Oh, and also, enjoy the week between, which is a Christmas song by me and Jonathan Colton. You can listen to it on Spotify.
Nice plug.
It's about the week between Christmas and New Year, which...
perfect time to announce this.
Yeah. And also enjoy another entry in the Omnibus. Ken, you and I both have spoken at great length about how many... mysteries of the unknown and unexplained captivated us when we were kids, and some of those mysteries remain unexplained. We were talking about the Bermuda Triangle just the other day. Whatever happened with that? Did we just decide to stop investigating it after all of those planes and ships disappeared? Well, you probably enjoy, as I do, Expedition Unknown, a television show that's now starting its 13th season on Discovery. And lucky for us, there's a podcast called Expedition Unknown, where the host, Josh Gates, investigates unsolved, iconic stories across the globe. This is right out of our playbook. With direct audio from the hit TV show, we'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, which we've talked about on our show, to the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama, which, as far as I know, we have never talked about on our show. But these authentic roughshod journeys help Gates separate fact from fiction and learn the truth behind compelling stories. And, wait for it, he investigates the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. His investigation led him to the ocean floor, to the skies above, and even the edge of space, to tackle some of the most intriguing disappearances in history. And this is what I've been saying to you, Ken. It isn't just the ocean floor. It goes to the very edge of space. And in the conclusion of his epic investigation, Josh used cutting-edge technology to investigate the Triangle's most infamous shipwrecks and lost flights. Will he find answers to just how the Triangle works, or will it forever remain a mystery? Tune in to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. we do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.